Thursday night edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. Got to get through the Atlantic Division. Lots of interesting teams there. The Celtics, Knicks, Sixers, Raptors for sure. And then we're going to do the Spurs and Pelicans as well. Talk about all those teams at the trade deadline. Our sponsors today, the Pineapple Beach Club in Antigua. Great place to go on a winter getaway if you live in one of those cold, snowy places. And SeatGeek, that cap space code can get you a $20 rebate off of your first SeatGeek purchase. Let's start with the Boston Celtics, obviously a team of intrigue with the massive stash of assets they have acquired. It might be useful to reacquaint the listeners with exactly what those are.
They have their own first round picks after this year, and the reason they don't have their own first this year is because they have the swap right with Brooklyn, which they're almost certain to exercise. They also give up their second in that trade. But on top of that, from a first round perspective, they have Brooklyn's 2018 pick unprotected. They have Memphis's 2019 pick protected 1-8 for in 2019 if the other one conveys this year, 1-6 in 2020 and unprotected in 2021. And then they also have the Clippers 2019 pick, which they acquired from Memphis on draft night, which is top 14 protected in 2019 and 2020, assuming that their other pick conveys to the Raptors this year.
The other component that the Celtics have is a lot of cap space this summer. That means that they are not going to want to take on long-term salary unless it is a player who absolutely moves the needle for them in terms of championship contention. They're already in position now to be the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. And with that being the case, unless they're getting like a guy who's probably a top 20 player in the league, I don't anticipate them taking on salary for next year. As of now, depending on a few factors, such as what draft pick they got, I've got them projected with getting the first pick because Brooklyn is so bad this year, but you know, there's only a 25% chance of that. Ante Zizic, their number 23 overall pick in 2016, as a guy who said he's already coming over this year. Gershon Yabusele, a Frenchman who is playing in China this year, he may not come over. So with those assumptions, and if they wanted to remove the cap hold of Kelly Olynyk, a restricted free agent, so they may not do that unless they get a big fish, they could get to maximum cap space this year. And they, of course, have plenty of very nice contracts that they could use to move even more salary, though those are, of course, good players. So with that being the case, it really seems to me that the only players that they would want to target, I guess there's a couple of things that they could do. One would be go after a smaller guy for this year that expires, Paul Millsap, Serge Ibaka, those are the two that come to mind. And they just have so many of these picks out there that maybe if the price were low enough and they could just, you know, maybe trade, probably not that Memphis pick because Memphis is going to be pretty bad, but that Clippers pick, one of their own first rounders, maybe give up those two, get someone who can really get you close this year. You just decide that the Cavs are faltering a little bit. Take a bite at the apple. Maybe you even then, if you strike out in free agency, you could look to re-sign whoever that is if the price were reasonable, because this summer is the last year they're going to have cap space. Once it gets around to 2018, there's just too many guys who are going to need to be re-signed. They're not going to have the space at that point. So and with having already used some of it on Al Horford going forward, what do you think of that kind of plan, Danny?
If they can get him at a low enough price, sure, why not? It's not that
big. What about the two first rounders that I mentioned? Is that realistic for Paul Millsap? And now again, your other problem is matching salary with Millsap too. So they have Tyler Zeller, who's under contract at $8 million. They probably would have to throw in maybe a Olynyk as well if you're going to get a player like that. Again, they might
Amir,
re-sign him. Yeah, that's right. Amir Johnson would be the other one who would go. You're right. Yeah, because he's making $12 million and Zeller is making $8 million. Zeller is non-guaranteed for next year. Johnson is a free agent. So that gets you there in terms of the salary, those two guys, which is nice. And at least you can, I kind of like that idea of having a little bit of flexibility. They have so many of these picks anyway, so many of these young guys. Do you really need like that many more? And if you want to try to compete this year with Cleveland, maybe that gets you there. I don't think either of those guys puts them over the top with Cleveland, but it gives you more of a puncher's chance. You're not going to beat the Warriors by getting either of those guys. But again, you know, it allows you to do something, kind of a half measure. The question is just, you know, I think Ibaka, maybe even one of those picks that ends up being enough, and then he makes $12 million. Amir Johnson could match the salary. Millsap, maybe those two, but probably not, because Atlanta's playing well enough that they're not going to want want to just punt on Millsap unless it's an overwhelming package.
And trading him to an East team would certainly not thrill their fan base. The ideal would be to get somebody who's a little bit, who's on a restricted, you know, restricted free agent, because then you would gain that flexibility. But none of the pending restricted free agents are good enough to fit that bill. I love Nerlens Noel, and I do actually enjoy his fit in Boston, but it's a very different calculus with him. And also, he could get paid too, and it's not like his cap hold is super cheap.
Yeah, and it's hard to say that he's going to put you over the top against anybody. He's never really played high-level basketball in the playoffs. He's renowned to be perhaps a bit of a head case. So I think he has a lot of potential. He could maybe help them. He could also be another hedge. His cap hold is pretty small. His cap hold is only about $11 million this year, so you wouldn't be able to re-sign him and sign somebody else to the max, but maybe you could use another $20 million, then re-sign him as well. He could also potentially make up matching salary for you to send out in another trade later as a guy who might be pretty good. He's going to want to get paid $20 million a year. Maybe you can use the restricted process to get that down just a little bit. But the other thing we should talk about too is the idea of really landing the big fish for these guys. What I have said before is, and I said that today on the Twitter NBA show as well, that to me, the price for Jimmy Butler is going to be at least, you know, this year's Brooklyn pick, probably. You don't know whether that's going to be the number one pick. Does Butler put you over the top next year when Horford and Isaiah are probably not going to be as good? Yeah, I don't know. Does he put you over the top this year? Probably not. And so maybe the time then to try and get him is in the summer or next trade deadline after you've already used your cap space. Because if you acquire Butler now you're giving up on the cap space. Better to use the cap space, then use the assets to go and try and acquire him later. Might have a little trouble cobbling together the salary, but you could probably get it done.
I agree with you on principle. And also both him and Paul George might be in situations where their teams are reluctant to trade their players now, but could be more open to it in a couple, yeah. You know, in 6 months. Yeah,
and the price is lower. The closer they get to free agency, the lower the price. The crappier their teams look after this year, once they can stop deluding themselves about being any good this year, which presumably is going to happen when they get into the offseason. You know, maybe Dwayne Wade leaves Chicago, they strike out in free agency.
I would say that's even more true with Paul George, because if it becomes clear that he doesn't want to sign that designated veteran deal with the Pacers,
or he
and
may
I'm not,
not
saying
be eligible
he will.
For it. Yeah, right. He probably won't be eligible for it at this point, because I don't see him on track to make an All-NBA team here.
If that's the case, then from a risk mitigation standpoint, of course the Pacers will have conversations with Paul George about what they want to do, but also the Celtics will know exactly what they have in that draft pick, and the pick this year, Markelle Fultz could be a big difference maker for them. That also changes the way they think about Isaiah Thomas depending on who they get in this draft, and all of those, they'll have so much more information if they wait. Also then the other central piece of information that they will get is Gordon Hayward, because while I would argue, and I think you would agree, that Paul George and Jimmy Butler are presently better players than Gordon Hayward, getting Gordon Hayward for nothing, signing him with cap space, is a much better thing than trading one or more Brooklyn picks for the other two guys.
Yeah, and of course, remember, Brad Stevens was Hayward's college coach, so there is some reason to think, and we'll see how Utah's season ends up, we'll see how Boston's season ends up. Lots of variables in the air there, and so I think it's more about the price for Butler being high, especially when that pick could be number one, you don't know yet. I think that
it's probably going to be the number one. It's going to have the most lottery balls. That doesn't always turn into the number one pick, but we're more certain of that now than we were a month ago.
And the other thing too is, if they just don't, like, everyone's when is Boston going to cash in these chips? They have all these assets. Like, what is Danny Ainge doing? Like, they're always so close to a deal. He always BS's about how they're so close. Like, get something done. They're in a very strong position if they just stand pat. If they use their cap space this summer on, you know, even if it's not a superstar, it's someone else who can provide some reinforcements, some more solid role players, a big man who can play, that kind of thing, reinforce your defense, go into next year still being pretty good, and you still got all those assets, you make that draft pick, they're going to have one more. Jaylen Brown can develop. I think that when you have three likely top five picks in a row, which they almost certainly will again next year with Brooklyn, I see no path forward for Brooklyn to avoid the bottom five next year unless someone just goes there in free agency. We'll talk about their situation in a second. So if you have three top five picks in a row and you have solid solid players on a good contract, like you're in a position to have a core that can be maybe not a championship contender, but a solid playoff team for like the next 10 years, assuming you don't just totally screw up these top five picks, and to be good and have that type of a future ahead of you as well. And then if those guys really hit and become stars, now you're totally in great shape. They don't have to give those picks up because they're looking pretty good already. It's like, it's not sneezing at something to just say, hey, we're going to be a top six, top four team in the East for like the next 10 years if we just kind of stand pat. And I think that's a decent outcome for them. It's possible that that could be their outcome if they just stay with what they have and just use their cap space this summer on even guys who aren't superstars.
It can be frustrating because we, and I'm using the royal we here, can be petulant children about this sort of a thing, that we want to see the end game. We want to see the results now. And the Celtics have to have the opportunity. Opportunity is the biggest issue here. Star players don't get traded very often. They don't even hit the market very often. And you have to agree on a valuation and make the trade. And those are the only players that they should consider doing this for. We don't know if the Pacers are even listening to calls. Like, really, you know, we have some sourced reporting, but just whether they're listening to calls. James Harden's don't hit the market very often for a reason. And that's the only circumstance. So I'm not going to get mad about it, especially when the uncertainty that we had with Brooklyn's picks 2 years ago. And I wrote a piece talking about how I thought then that the Celtics assets were overvalued. I don't feel that way anymore because we know Brooklyn is going to be bad for the next 2 years. And that's all we have to worry about.
Yeah. And they still have that Memphis pick too. That's another one that they really can decide to fire away if they want to. Let's get to Brooklyn momentarily. But first, this from the Pineapple Beach Club in Antigua. We are lucky enough, Danny, to live in California where it is not that cold. But I used to live in Chicago. And the reason I don't live there anymore is because the weather is pretty miserable. And all you East Coasters, I know you're probably feeling the same way here in the doldrums of winter. But the Pineapple Beach Club is a way to relieve that. This getaway comes at an even more amazing price right now because for just $149 a person per night, you can enjoy an adults-only, 16 or over, all-inclusive getaway on a white sandy beach. I love those white sandy beaches. They only have those, really, it seems like, in the Caribbean, where it's so white that the sand doesn't even get hot. Like, they don't really have those in the U.S., the continental U.S. You can also get a $250 resort credit. You can use that for sailing trips, romantic dining, safari tours, spa services, gift shop purposes. All this takes place on 30 acres of tropical foliage and panoramic vistas just 30 minutes away from the capital city, St. John. The resort features 5 restaurants, 3 bars and lounges, 2 freshwater pools, and a spa. So make time for some well-deserved R&R and go to pineapplebeachclub.com or call 800-772-8711 to book your all-inclusive stay. Don't wait. This offer expires soon. For $149 per night per person, you can enjoy everything I just mentioned and more, and you get that $250 resort credit. That's pineapplebeachclub.com. See website for complete details. Brooklyn, where are they in terms? We know they don't really have much in the way of assets. They're not going to be trying to get better this year. It seems like the most likely type of transaction they could make would be to try to reach the salary floor, which they are below still by about $8 million or so.
Agreed that that's probably their best path to getting something back. I'll go through their picks just so we have it all. They do not have their own picks this year, assuming the swap happens, but they have both of Boston's first and Boston's second. They have no 2018
amazing foresight
first.
By Billy King, by the way, to get that second.
Yeah, to get as a reward for the swap. So if Boston executes the swap, they lose their second round pick. So kudos.
Yeah, Billy King, really great damage control there.
The Nets also don't have their 2018 first, but they're clear on first round picks after that. They also have none of their own seconds until 2021, but they do have that reverse lottery protected second from the Pacers as a part of the Thaddeus Young trade. So basically whenever the Pacers miss the playoffs, the Nets will get their second round pick, which is nice, I guess.
So really let's talk about what they have for this summer, right? Because you would think this is a great dumping ground to pick up an asset, you know, the JaVale McGee kind of transaction. The problem is that a lot of those bad contracts, I mean, the only contract that really I think is from like before 2016 that is going to try and get dumped is probably like Omer Asik, right? And the Pels are bad enough that they're not going to want to give up their draft picks, and they don't have any young guys who are really going to interest Brooklyn either who are under contract. If the Pels had those guys, they'd be playing them and wouldn't want to give them up. So Asik, probably not a deal that gets done. And then you get into the bad contracts from this year. Jan Mahimi, assuming that he can't come back in play this year. Evan Turner, Timofey Mozgov, Luol Deng. And again, I think really the only Myers Leonard would be another one too. That's one that might make sense. Maybe you could try to, but it's more likely a summer transaction, I would say. But like Myers Leonard could be someone that maybe they say, hey, we can get this guy. We'll play him at center. We like that he shoots threes. Maybe he'll be worth his contract, and we could get that Cleveland pick that Portland has to get off of that salary. Maybe that's something that they could do, because I think they're going to understand, being as bad as they are after the lessons of this last summer, their cap space is just not going to go that far this next summer. Maybe in 2018, once the market really starts to stabilize, they might be able to do more with their space. But I still think this summer, when half the league is going to have a lot of space, you're probably not getting it much if you're Brooklyn this year.
The Knicks are a good example of this. You know, Joakim Noah's contract is distinctly not great, but they probably won't have enough. They won't have enough urgency to make that trade right now. And also, it's giving up a lot of future space.
And maybe the Knicks, it seems again that those type of contracts for those teams, like the Knicks are going to try to be a cap space team, right? Like maybe they get some awesome free agent where they're like, all right, we'll send you a lottery protected or a top eight protected first or something, Brooklyn, if you'll take on Noah at that point.
Like the Jazz after the Warriors agreed to terms with Iguodala and needed to clear the space.
Yeah, I think that's kind of more what would be the case for a team like Brooklyn. But if there is any dumpable salary, they could certainly, like Chris Anderson from the Cavs. Again, you'd wonder like what's even worth it for them to take that. But they save money by taking someone like Anderson at this point. So they might even do it just for that reason. But I don't think that there are any teams that want to move salary right now at the deadline. I think it's more likely that happens in the summer.
I'll say one thing. Yeah. They are the most obvious facilitator in a more complicated trade. Like there were some, Albert Nahmad worked out some logistics in terms of the Clippers getting Carmelo Anthony, and that trade could really use a third party. The Nets make the most sense of anyone because they're so desperate for assets.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And they could just take some cash from some of these teams as well. I don't really have that much more to say about them, though. I think that's...
I have one thing, because we have to talk about Brook Lopez a little bit. And the general rule here, he will expire in 2018, so this season and next. I would listen, but the center market is so oversaturated, it's probably
not going
to happen.
It's got to be two first round picks or a pick that at least has the potential of being in the lottery. Otherwise, I mean, it's bad enough for their fans already. Like, is one late first round pick enough for you to subject them to being even worse? And they've only won 9 games this year, so already, you know. So and maybe next year, all right, if Lynn comes around, Lopez is still there, sign some more middling free agents, maybe they can at least win, like, you know, 25 games or something next year.
It's so unfortunate for them that Lopez doesn't push a lot of the teams that are on the fringe over the edge, because those teams have centers.
Yeah, I mean, if he were just the equivalent level of player and he were like a small forward or something, then they would be in much better shape, but that's not the case. So I don't think, that's why I don't think there's a Lopez trade to be imminent, because there's nobody willing to, like, he's, odd as it is to say, for a team that's totally out of it, it's rare that this is the case, he's still probably worth more to them than he would be to a contender, because there just aren't teams that need him. You know, maybe like Charlotte might have been one, but now they already made this Plumlee deal, you know,
right?
So,
and they have Cody Zeller already, so
yeah,
and they can't trade him because, well, I'm not saying that because his contract is bad, but just because he's in this area where he's agreed to an extension, but it hasn't kicked in yet.
Right, exactly. All right, should we go on to the Knicks now?
A slightly rosier picture, I guess. And the Knicks have all their own first round picks. Woo, moving forward. And unfortunately, they have none of their own seconds until 2022. They do have 2017 seconds from Chicago and Houston, and they have two teams TBA in 2019. I hadn't thought about this until Derek Bodner made it in passing on Real Jam Radio. The Sixers have the Knicks second round picks in 2019, 20, and 21.
Yeah. That's hinky. So why are they trying to trade Carmelo Anthony if you're not going to actually get anything back? Like, none of the packages...
That's a great question. Because try for Kevin Love. Sure, of course.
Yeah, yeah. But like, just this idea that you're just going to dump him. I mean, now, Phil Jackson, I want to say it was like in that first Tyson Chandler trade that he made, he basically excused making a crappy trade with Dallas because he wanted to like send Tyson somewhere that he wanted to go, because Phil Jackson is just so player friendly. Well, let's just say that some of his actions since then, that view viewpoint has probably dissipated around the league. So this idea that you're going to get some goodwill by sending Carmelo somewhere that he wants to go and not taking anything back just as kind of a favor to him. And of course, he has the no trade, so it has to be somewhere that he wants to go, but you could just not trade him at all as well. I mean, to me, just start like rebuilding and keep the guy. And maybe there's another time that you can trade him. But if you're just going to get back Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford, like that type of stuff, I mean, maybe the Clippers would throw in some first round pick like 6 years from now, which if it were unprotected, actually, I might think about that. But nonetheless, Phil's not going to be around to see that through. So unless you can actually get something that's real from the three teams that he might be willing to go to, and Boston apparently has little interest, and I think that's rightfully so, frankly. He's not going to put them over the top. They already can't stop anybody. They score really well already. What's the point there? Especially because now you're giving up on your chance of signing a 2017 free agent if you get him, so they're not interested.
Melo also might open up his list a little bit over the summer just because teams will be more open, and so he could say, oh, I could play with this player, and you could do those negotiations. You can't do that now because there isn't much flexibility, and especially the Clippers.
And maybe a Boston type of team might be more interested in him if they don't get the free agent that they like, or
Chicago
or one of these teams that might make him be like, all right, you know, it's at least a little better. But he has said, of course, that with his kid in New York, with his wife in New York, it's his decision, he says, but it's gonna be something that's really totally overwhelming for him. And then, of course, he doesn't want to go there if they have to send too much back either, because then that team won't be as good, right? He doesn't want to go to the Clippers if they have to send JJ Redick back. Well,
he did do that once already, so
yeah.
So where I wanted to go, not with Melo, but it's been lost in this whole conversation, is when I was working through all these trade deadline previews, the Knicks need to trade Brandon Jennings because they can get something for him. He could help any number of teams. You're now not going to get a first, but a mid-second round pick would really help them. And they have no value really to keeping Jennings around because they have non-bird rights on him. They could sign him as a free agent this summer anyway if they wanted to, get something small for him, have him help out a different team.
That's a thought. Frank Isola has suggested that they should trade Derrick Rose with the amount that Rose is making. I'm not sure that he really helps another team either. He also is a pending free agent. Like, you're not going to get anything. You're not getting a first round pick for trading Derrick Rose, especially after some of his episodes earlier in the year.
It's a shame the Nets don't have the right picks, because that would be a great way of doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd just hold on to Rose, hold on to Melo. Maybe you turn it around a little bit, maybe not. But I mean, what do you think the chances are that Melo actually gets traded this trade deadline? Like 15%, 10%, something like that?
10%. Unless the Knicks just lower their bar so crazily that it doesn't make sense.
Even if they do, like, who it's either Cleveland or it's LA, right? And I guess maybe LA can pay someone to take on Crawford's salary or whatever, like, as
I don't think it's going to be Cleveland this year.
I really don't.
There isn't enough common ground there to make a trade. If it's going to happen this year, my feeling is that it's the Clippers or nothing. This season, sorry, I'll clarify, because then during the offseason, right, I think there's a lot that's open.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. In terms of, are we just assume that they're out of it, right? They're not going to do anything to try and get better this year, we hope, right?
You can never rule it out with the Knicks, and especially considering they have a team president who is older, that they could go after something. I said they have all their own first round picks. They're not limited by the Stepien rule, so maybe, but I hope not. I mean, I wrote a piece before the summer saying I hope they don't spend a bunch of money in a bad way, and look how that turned out. And actually, that leads into something I wanted to discuss, which is Courtney Lee. I've brought this up before, but I want to say it one more time. Courtney Lee is a good basketball player on a reasonable contract. He does not make sense for the Knicks. They should try to see if another team is interested in him at his price.
Well, and he's making about $12 million a year for the 3 years after this one, but he's a player at 31 now. He's a lower end starting shooting guard at this point, will probably age into being a backup, into being overpaid towards the end of that. That sort of player makes sense on a team that is trying to be really good right now. The Knicks are not that anymore. And also, they could move him and maybe clear out some more space, although then they will again have the problem of not having a two guard. So maybe they just try to kick him around, to keep him around. That's another thing where if they can't really get a first rounder back for him, and I don't think they can given where his, or they can't get a young prospect back for him, that's another one where I think they just wait until the summer and see what's out there in terms of potential replacements for him, who might want to come there, and then they could always move him if they needed to during the summer. But presumably they're going to try and be okay again next year, and he at least provides competent play at the two. They don't have any, they don't have anybody else under contract at the 1-3, assuming we're going to play Carmelo Moore at the 4 and Porzingis at the 5. They really have nothing at 1-3 at all who's a starting level of player going into next season.
Yeah, I don't really have much opposition to that.
And, I mean, I would be shopping him. I would listen, yeah. But I'm not sure what's enough to give up on him at this point, assuming that you're going to try to be okay next year.
Plus, we've talked about the collection of teams that don't have cap space next year that are make a lot of sense for various players. Charlotte just, you know, did their piece by the Miles Plumlee trade. None of those teams particularly need a two guard. If Tony Allen decided to leave, Memphis would, and Cordelia has experience there, but I don't see that as a trade that really makes sense for either side at this juncture. And New Orleans, they like Buddy Hield. It doesn't really make much sense considering Lee is pretty much a straight two. So those, I don't see him fitting any of those teams, even though that's the intuitive fit in terms of situation that would make sense if you're going to move him now.
For the Knicks, you could say that maybe one reason to move on from Jennings, one reason to move on from Courtney Lee would be to just be worse this year and try to get another pick. And right now, though, the Knicks could improve their draft position a reasonable amount by getting a lot worse. They're projected at 35 wins, still a 17% chance of the playoffs at this point, with the Bucks somewhat faltering and the Heat have kind of gotten back into it now. So
they're a game and a half out of the 8 seed right now.
Yeah, which is crazy to think about. And the Mavs are kind of coming up behind them. The Wolves are playing well. They could really go either direction. So I guess when they're that close to the 8 seed, especially, also don't forget about this too. Jim Dolan can get out of that contract with Phil Jackson at the end of this year. So is Phil going to want to punt and end up with 29 wins? Yeah, probably. I mean, they've already won 22, so even that may not be realistic, but he's going to want to get as close to the playoffs as he can just to ensure himself another 2 years and $24 million when Dolan could fire him at the end of this year if he wants to, because they have that mutual option.
Mutual options are so much fun. I love them.
Well, I mean, how hilarious would it be? I mean, I think with an executive, it's a little different than a player because there's not as much like, oh, I can go on the open market and do better. There's not really that aspect to it as much. So to say that mutual options never get exercised, I think it's more likely it could happen with Phil. But still, it would be interesting if this were the one that gets exercised. Anything else you wanted to talk about with these guys? I don't foresee a major move for them either. I mean, well, it's easy to say I don't foresee a major move because you're going to be right 90% of the time to just say that every time, but there's nothing really that strikes me here unless they're just gonna dump guys. I mean, if they wanted to get better, like, what would they do? They don't have the seconds. Young guys, I mean, you know, Willie Hernan Gomez, I think they're probably gonna try and have him be, you know, either start next to Porzingis where he's not a horrible fit, especially offensively, or just, you know, be a backup center. I think he could be good in that role the next couple of years as a cheap second rounder. What's the price to dump answer that first, then I want to ask you about Noah too.
I was thinking about dumping Kyle O'Quinn, but I like Kyle O'Quinn. I mean, when he's not throwing players into stanchions and whatnot, he can be a good player. He's on a reasonable contract. They just don't need him with all the other stuff they have on their team.
Yeah, Hernan Gomez, I think, has passed him at this point, and obviously is younger and a smarter player as well.
Would you have traded him for Roy Hibbert in a small asset, theoretically?
Who, O'Quinn?
Yeah.
It depends what it is. Yeah, I mean, if it were a wing guy, maybe. I'm not sure who that, you know, like Jeremy Lamb, I probably would have tried that. I don't know if Lamb, it's really, everyone falls in love with
Lamb and Courtney Lee again. The dynamic duo from Charlotte last year.
But yeah, there's obviously more positional scarcity with someone like that. I don't think that there's a trade to be made for a wing for one of their bigs. Last question before we finish up on them. What is the price to just dump Joakim Noah?
Two firsts, at least one of which is a surefire or real close to it lottery pick.
What if it was just a straight up unprotected pick, like either next year or the year after?
How bad is the team?
Well, I don't know. No, it's the Knicks pick.
Oh, trading. Ooh.
The Knicks are giving up a pick just to straight dump Noah's salary. Now, they wouldn't do that until the offseason, again, because you don't want to dump him and then not be able to sign anyone, right, Orlando?
Oh, man. Usually I'm the one who throws the shade at them. But I don't think I would, because the Knicks are, I think that pick's probably going to end up around top 10, and Noah is on your books for a long time, even if you stretch him. I mean, if you stretch him, he's on your books for a real long time. And there are no hopeless teams right now other than Brooklyn, but Brooklyn isn't hopeless for 3 years. They're hopeless for two.
I mean, is Josh Smith really killing the Pistons that badly at this point at like $5 million? on the books for forever and ever, for eternity, forever. And because that would basically be what it would be if they stretch him next year. Well, I guess Smith was already in the second year of his contract, so he only got stretched over 5 years. If they stretched Noah before September 1st,
it would be seven years.
Oh, man. And he was making $16 million instead of $13 million like Smith was. All right, let's move on. I think it's somewhere in between those. I mean, maybe a team like the Nets would just say, hey, you know what? Like, we just need some kind of a pick with some upside. We'll take a risk. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. You know, and maybe they could just say, well, we can buy you out, Noah, and save. Hopefully we could save like $10 million on that and just go wherever you want.
Well, and also remember, depending on how they structure it, there would be a setoff with that, because he would sign for a non-zero amount with another team if it, depending on how the setoff agreement is done.
Yeah, that is true, that he is not possible to sign for zero, but I think he'd be pretty close to it. And the whole point of him, the whole point of him leaving as well would be that he would want to just go anywhere, and he's already getting paid, so he probably wouldn't be prioritizing money. But now we're getting too far afield. Let's talk about the Sixers in a moment. But first off, if you want to see someone other than Joakim Noah play basketball, because I'm not sure I'd be paying to see him at this point, SeatGeek does make your ticket buying a lot less expensive and easier, but it's not totally free still. You can get started by downloading the free SeatGeek app. Go into the settings tab, add a promo code, use that cap space code, which of course we talk about all the time on the program, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase to go see someone other than the New York Knicks play basketball. I guess it could be the Knicks, but in this scenario, we probably don't want to go and see them. Every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Like the Warriors sent out this blast that there were some counterfeit tickets out there. You don't have to worry about that with SeatGeek. It's backed by that 100% guarantee. The two things that are awesome about SeatGeek in terms of using it: number one, they aggregate together ticket sites, so you don't have to worry that you're missing the best deal. You don't have to go to a bunch of different sites. It's the level of convenience. That's one. And then what also makes it convenient is they rank every ticket based on value. So you go into the section that you want to sit in, pick whatever they say is the best value ticket. Danny has worked in the ticket business. He agrees with the way that they rank the values. And those are the two most annoying tasks, are picking the right seat that's the best value and going to a bunch of different sites. Now you can do that in 2 minutes, find your seat. So it used to be an annoying task. It would take 20 or 30 minutes. Now you can just go ahead and do it right away with that SeatGeek app. Go into the settings tab, click add a promo code, CapSpace, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase. So download that SeatGeek app, enter promo code CapSpace today. So the Sixers are not where they necessarily expected to be, although with this Kings pick swap, one of those two hopefully will still end up in the top three, either theirs or the Kings. They'll still have one pick for sure in the top 10, and then maybe that Lakers pick as well, which they probably will have about a 50% chance of getting if the Lakers finish with the second worst record. If it's in the top three, the Lakers keep it. Otherwise, the Sixers get it. If the Lakers keep it, it's unprotected to the Sixers next year. What else do they have in terms of assets? Not that they're necessarily going to go get something this year, but just so we can run it down.
They have about $17 million in cap space. They have Sacramento's unprotected first in 2019. And then they don't have their own 2017 second, but they have them after that. And then they have some extraneous ones, including those Knicks ones I mentioned before. And then also, they have a ton of players on reasonable contracts. So if they wanted to, they could move those players for future assets, but they could also move them for present assets if they wanted.
Yeah, Rashawn Holmes, Dario Saric, even Nick Stauskas is probably not like a terrible value anymore. We've talked about Nerlens Noel quite a bit. Jahlil Okafor, there was a rumor from Vinny Goodwill out of Chicago today that the Bulls had some interest in Okafor, which is kind of hilarious. I don't foresee that going anywhere, but at least they are inquiring about him. Sergio Rodriguez is someone that they could send back in salary matching if they wanted to take on more bad salary. I don't think they want to do that though, because they're looking, even with Noel's cap hold, at about $38 million in space. They also have a non-guarantee on Gerald Henderson that I think that they will probably guarantee him before free agency, because his guarantee date is June 30th. So he'll probably get guaranteed, but a guy who could be moved if they really needed to. Noel's cap hold is $11 million, as we said earlier. So if they wanted to, they could in theory get it to almost $60 million in space by moving on from those guys. They also have Furkan Korkmaz, a Turkish wing that they drafted number 26 in 2016, kind of a skinny scorer shooter type of guy. So they have just about, probably don't have quite as much ammo overall as the Celtics do, but certainly pretty darn close to there. I don't foresee them making a move to try and get better this year, especially they've taken a little bit of a step back with them beat out for a little bit here after they had that great run in January. So I expect them to kind of stand pat. They are, however, over $15 million under the cap still, so they could just take on some bad salary this year, or just a team that's in the tax to take somebody off their hands, that kind of a thing. That's probably more likely the type of move that they would make, I think.
The biggest decision, and this has been true for about a year now, that they have to make is, what do they want to do with their big men? They now know that when healthy, Joel Embiid is their center of the future. So how do you handle everything else? Do you keep Nerlens, see what happens in restricted free agency, try to keep him, try to sign and trade him, trade Jahlil Okafor? Rashawn Holmes is also a factor here. And it sucks when we're doing one of these. It'll be way more fun in the mock off season, or in the mock trade deadline, because it's so dependent on what the offers are. I can't say they should trade Nerlens, they should trade Jahlil Okafor, because it depends on what they get offered. I will say that I would be more reluctant to trade Nerlens because I'm a believer in his ceiling.
Yeah, although his ceiling, of course, is constrained by the fact that you have Joel Embiid playing 30 minutes a game. They hope. Embiid, I don't know where he is medically. I don't know what the risk is that he's going to re-injure that navicular. We've had guys had success with that graft surgery. We've had other guys not have as much success. Yao Ming being one of those. I think it was Zydrunas Ilgauskas did have success with that similar injury. I can't remember whether it was Ilgauskas was the fifth metatarsal or whether he was a navicular. I think he might have been metatarsal, but nonetheless, he could re-injure it. I would like to see him get through the whole season healthy, but by that time it's a lot harder. You can't trade Noel anymore, he's not under contract. Okafor you could theoretically trade. Okafor has been awful this year, taken a step back probably from last year when he wasn't that good either. I think he's been slightly better defensively, but he's still a complete liability there. Has struggled with little nagging injuries, had that surgery last year, so his value would seem to be at an A-tier. If you were the Sixers, what's it going to take? It does seem also like they're more likely to move on from Okafor. Noel is the small cap hold. You probably, maybe you think, all right, we'll re-sign him to what it'll take, have him play as a backup. You know, if we get there, we may even have Embiid be on the rest plan a little bit next year too. He can start for us then, and he's under contract, and we can still use him to make a trade at some point later on too if he continues to play well.
There is a basketball equivalent of FOMO, which is worrying about trading a guy and having him become a star somewhere else. And, you know, James Harden's a good example of this. But that fear should be waning within the Sixers organization. You do not write off Jahlil Okafor at this point, but the idea that he becomes a star, or even like a top 10 starter at the center position, is not that high. So worst comes to worst, maybe you lose a starting center, but you already have one. So I would feel pretty comfortable selling low-ish, because it's going to be a while until you can sell better than that with him.
What is low-ish?
Late first?
Wow. Yeah, it's just like, excuse me, it becomes harder and harder to find a scenario in which he's going to improve his value, unless they just shut Embiid down. But he's not going to play back-to-backs all year. Okafor is going to get a chance. He's had like a couple of games where he scored okay, like that Washington game, but I think people understand that he can score on occasion. It's really too bad for them that this isn't 15 years ago, not only because big men were more valued back then, but just because people are like, oh, he averages how many points per game, okay, sign me up.
They also have Rashawn Holmes, so the perils of being without a backup center are largely irrelevant for them. They have a backup center already. Rashawn Holmes has two more non-guaranteed seasons at the minimum after this year. So even if you lose Nerlens, you have Joel, you have Rashawn Holmes. Yeah, you would suck if Joel Embiid was out for an extended period of time, but I don't think Jahlil Okafor would have solved those problems anyway. So you move him, I would move him now, assuming you get even a reasonable offer, which they should, you know, some team in that area should make an offer just on the idea of asset management, because look at what the 27th, 28th, 29th pick in the draft usually becomes. I mean, why not? And he has two more years on rookie scale, so he's still cost controlled for a while, and he could end up being at least an offensive dynamo and maybe a little bit more than that.
Would you trade him to the Bulls for like Doug McDermott?
I don't know how much value McDermott gives the Sixers, considering he's going to become expensive relatively soon, and he's not such such a rare commodity.
Yeah, you could make the argument that he could get there, especially because he has the ability to post up if you want to put a smaller guy on him.
Him and Covington playing together would be fun.
Yeah, I would like him next to Ben Simmons as well as a shooter, where who are you going to have your point guard? Normally it would be this guy who's a shooter, but if McDermott can get into the post and hurt that guy, that makes it a little bit easier. I mean, I don't know what the Bulls already have two other centers on their roster, too, though one of them is going to be a free agent. But just because that rumor was out there, I thought that was interesting.
Well, I've got one for you. This is not one I think this team is thinking of, but it looks like Washington is good this year. And let's say Mahinmi is close to a lost cause. Would they be realistically able to do better with their first-round pick than somebody like Jahlil Okafor? Protect the heck out of it. You know, put it like top 20 protection this year and then relax that to lottery or something even past that next year.
Yeah, I think the Sixers have so many draft picks, though, that at some point it's just going to become too difficult to use all of them. I think I would want a guy who just can slot into a role. And that's why I'm starting to think that maybe Jahlil, it would make more sense to move him in the offseason for a couple of reasons. One, at that point, you've hopefully made a foray into free agency, gotten another guy who is going to help you. You have a little better idea of what you're going to need, right? Even if you wanted to trade him for a solid bench guy in the offseason from a team that maybe wants someone with a little more upside at the center position or needs some scoring or whatever, that you know much more what you're going to need at that point. I mean, I think McDermott is always going to be useful because he can shoot, but also you'll have seen Ben Simmons come back and play, know whether he's going to be a point guard for you or not, what position he's going to play, whether he's going to be healthy as well. That's another thing to consider. And then in terms of potential destinations for Okafor, we've noted that the center market is pretty overheated right now. I don't expect that to change that much, but at least there'll be some teams that maybe didn't get the center that they wanted or just happened to have the musical chairs passed them by in terms of centers this offseason, or feel like they struck out and now they want to feel like they did something, whatever. I think it could be a more fruitful effort in the offseason. And then you also know what happened with Noel as well. What if Noel gets a max offer somewhere else and now you want to just use Jahlil as your backup center? You didn't want to match it on Noel for that price.
I'm going to give a nuance on that, which is there's a possibility also of trading him on draft night, because then you're sitting there with GMs sure. that go, well, crap, I have the 25th pick. The guys that I really liked are already gone.
It works the opposite way.
It does.
They become more valuable when it's like, oh, you can actually put a name to that pick, like right on draft day. It seems like that's when they're the most valuable.
But I
see your point.
But let's say the 25th pick and you can get a top five talent 2 years ago who was young when he got drafted and still has potential. There's an easy argument that he's been underutilized, poorly utilized where he is. And just that's a more likely lottery ticket than the guy that you're drafting at 26 or 25.
Anything else you want to talk about for these guys? I think that
one quick thing, you talked about Gerald Henderson. The analogy I want to make is to Amir Johnson and Jonas Jerebko, that I feel like it's going to get picked up because whether they keep him or not, he's looks like a reasonable value at that number.
Well, and the difference with them, of course, was that their guarantees were actually into July, whereas Henderson's is earlier. But I agree with you. I do think it does get picked up. More so because what they're going to do better than $9 million for Gerald Henderson. I mean, he's been playing 25 minutes a game. He's a solid player, can defend, a good fit next to Simmons, I think, other than the fact that he's not a great shooter. But
he's an expiring contract. You're not going to get many guys of his caliber that are going to agree to a 1 year, $9 million contract as free agent.
Yeah, maybe there's some possibility he could be used as salary matching on a trade right at the draft and then would be waived. But I think he's a good contract for somebody. I think as long as his hips aren't bothering him too much, which is something that could happen. We've talked about it before on previous shows, but Noel, what's the price for him? Is a late first going to do it for you there?
No, I would want a late lottery pick or something close to it.
What about just like a solid backup wing?
How much team control are we talking? A couple years? I wouldn't do it for an expiring guy, or maybe.
Yeah, okay.
But they would need to be able to shoot, because that narrows the market. A solid backup wing who can shoot is it's not empty. It's not like there are zero of them, but there are not many.
No, that's a good point. What about, I guess he's going to be a free agent after this year, probably, if he declines his option. But what about like a CJ Miles type guy? Would that do it for you?
No.
Assuming he were under for that long? Okay. Yeah, I think you're probably, I feel,
because they're going to have so many ways to get a CJ Miles type guy in drafts and in free agency that aim a little bit higher.
Yeah, and I'm starting to believe that just holding on to him is not the absolute end of the world. I mean, he seems to want out of there, but...
Another point, I talked about this a little bit before, but they have a very credible threat of matching with him as a restricted free agent, and they can get a small asset back in a situation just because they have so much flexibility. And the difference between that they could get just for another team just getting the peace of mind of saying, fine, we like Nerlens, we have a good price, we want him, is not that different from CJ Miles.
Yeah, you're talking about like in a sign and trade that you could get something back in a sign and trade. Yeah. All right, let's move on to Toronto here. In free fall at the moment, Gerard DeRozan has been out. They had an ugly come from ahead loss to the Celtics last night, and what was a pretty good game that I enjoyed watching once we got home from Oracle. But it's Paul Millsap has been talked about. Serge Ibaka has been talked about. I think we discussed some of what the offers for those guys might be, but just from Toronto's side now, not how much it would take from Atlanta to say yes. Tell me what the most is that you would offer for Paul Millsap.
It's basically the offer that you made on Twitter. So that was Terrence Ross, salary filler. Well, that was one first round pick. And I would not include Norman Powell because I really like Norman Powell.
Yeah. What about both their picks this year?
Yes, fine. Ross, I would do that. No problem.
Ross,
no problem.
Sullinger, because they have their pick and then they have the Clippers lottery protected pick. I guess we should go through some more of their assets too. They have Bruno Caboclo. I'm not even sure he is an asset anymore. Jakob Poeltl has not played at all. He's got some nice rim protection numbers and a very small sample size. Maybe he could turn into like, you know, a 25 minute a game starting center someday if you squint hard. Dalen Wright hasn't played at all. He's already 24, gonna turn 25 pretty soon, I think, as well, coming off that shoulder surgery. They've got Corey Joseph as a backup point guard that maybe teams would be interested in, and if they feel like Wright, they're ready to promote him. But they also, maybe they could lose Lowry, and so they want to hold on to Joseph, who could start for them in a pinch next year. Powell, whom you mentioned, he's looked great as a potential starting shooting guard. I really actually have liked what Paolo has been able to do guarding ones as well, which he rarely has a chance to do. So I think he can guard like 1 through 2.5. He's looked good off the dribble. He hits his jumpers. Like he's a real, I think he can be a starting shooting guard for someday. So it definitely would mean a lot to move on from him. I think if they did include him in that deal with the Hawks, they would have to get back probably like a Tim Hardaway Jr. would be someone that they could get back, a restricted free agent that they could maybe look to re-sign, just who could be like a Terrence Ross light, although since he put up like 21 in the fourth quarter, maybe he's better than Terrence Ross right now. Who knows, probably better defensively. But I think I would be willing to do that.
You would have to
Toronto,
have,
and here's why, because what are you doing otherwise?
But wouldn't you need some sort of assurance that Millsap's going
to
come back?
No, I don't think I would. I would talk to him. If he says hell no, I'm not coming back for no way, I would give it a shot, see what you can do. Maybe you just re-sign everyone and it costs a ton of money, but so be it. Like, your team was so good, you were so close, you can get off of some other money later, whatever. You know, they have a fairly deep pocketed ownership, although it's a little bit more shadowy in turn, you know, since it's not like an actual person, I don't think. But there's I would just do it. Like, they have been successful with this, all right, we'll keep everyone together and everything keeps kind of coming up Toronto, but that was early in the season. Now I think maybe reality is kind of setting in as they have fallen into the third seed. They're only on pace for 50 wins. They think that like Jared Sullinger can actually play for them. They're going to find out that that's not true. They want to like give him a chance. So I would do it. I would just pull the trigger. Whether that's enough for Atlanta, whether even in that mindset anymore, I don't know, but this is the best year of Kyle Lowry's career. This is probably going to be the best year of DeMar DeRozan's career. So their defense isn't good enough. The only way they can compete with Cleveland is if they get a great defensive player. That's what Millsap is. Another guy who can play make a little bit too, attack switches. He can move the ball a little bit too, give him a little bit more of that element. You could play him with Patterson, so you don't have to play Valanciunas or Bebe, who both of them are going to get run off the floor by Cleveland or probably even Boston as well at the end of games. He gives them a puncher's chance. Probably you're not even close to the favorite, but they don't have a puncher's chance right now, in my opinion, and that would get them there. And while you'd be giving up, oh, we can't give up Poly. Yeah, you know, he might be a starting shooting guard. Terrence Ross is a pretty good backup. All right, keep those guys. What are you getting? You're not getting anywhere. You're close enough that you could just take a swing. They're still going to lose to the Warriors, even if they get Millsap, even if they somehow get past Cleveland. But getting to the finals is pretty awesome when you consider what everything that they have here.
I agree with you, but my instinct, just somebody who's followed the league for a while, is that that the price and the combination of risk means there's a real chance if the Magic are willing to move on from Ibaka, that might make more sense. There's also the connection between Ibaka and Ujiri. I believe they've done Basketball Without Borders and things like that together, and he's played in different markets and everything else. I think that might happen, but again, it depends so much on what the current team is thinking, and we don't know that for sure right now. And I'm
meaning the Magic or the Hawks,
correct? And theory. I'm guessing the price for Ibaka is significantly lower, especially because he hasn't incredibly impressed this year. Meaning the trade price, the free agent price. Ugh, that's really complicated. But I just feel like there's closer to a meeting of the minds there than with Millsap, especially with the Hawks doing so well. Right. It's almost unprecedented to see a team that is top five in their conference give up a guy and basically tank their season.
The Bulls that have played well in the last couple of games, Taj Gibson is another guy that they could target, I think, more as a center, a good pick and roll center who could switch a little bit, even though he's getting older now. That's someone that they could look at, I think. Because I actually think center is more of a weakness for them defensively against the two teams they're going to have to beat in the East. Like, I don't think Valanciunas or Bebe can stay on the floor. So I wouldn't be against acquiring a center or, you know, a kind of power forward, a 4.5 type of guy in today's NBA. I'm not sure exactly who that is defensively other than Taj Gibson. But, you know, I might give up one of those two late first rounders. They have so many young guys anyway to get Gibson. Just say, we'll give you the better of those two picks. Bulls for Gibson, but they may not be in a trading mood themselves.
Since I know this is going to bring a smile to your face, how would you like Darrell Arthur there for a smaller asset?
Yeah, no, I think he would be good there too. But again, this is what we talked about this in the Denver section, where they're also trying to win. They've got enough young guys that like some second rounder isn't really gonna do it for you. Toronto doesn't have that big defensive wing that they would want to get back. I mean, I guess if you get a first rounder for Darrell Arthur, you probably need to do it because it's worth more in a vacuum. And Arthur, I think, would help. He's under contract for another 2 years after this one. Has been struggling with his knees a little bit. Yeah, that might not be a bad one. I think Arthur has really impressed me at times defensively this year when he's been able to get on the court with some more shot blocking that I remember from him. And he's been solid guarding bigs and switching out on smalls. It's not like Denver has been any world beaters defensively, but I think in a good system, he could be very impressive at times.
I wish they had a high to mid second, just because then that would become more tenable for somebody like Aron Baynes, maybe, just to get somebody in that range. But he's not worth it.
Yeah,
first.
But Aron Baynes is too slow. They already have some big, slow-ass guy at center. Like, they need someone who's fast. Like, Baynes, to me, doesn't help them at all. I think Bebe and Valanciunas are both better than Baynes. So what does that help at all?
Okay. I trust him a little bit more than
sorry. Bebe, sorry to like, get on you at 1:59 a.m. here.
That's honest discourse is what makes this work.
No, I think Baynes could be moved, but I think he would have been a better fit. Charlotte, if they could have gone after him instead of Plumlee. By the way, if you want to hear our analysis on that, go listen to the Twitter NBA show. We talked about it pretty extensively. We're not running that as a simulcast, as we got all this trade deadline stuff to get through here. All right, I think that's about it for Toronto at this point. You got anything else you wanted to say?
I don't expect any of their young guys to get moved because they don't seem like logical filler right now. But who knows? Maybe if a team like Orlando values one of those dudes, they could throw him in. God, I guess DeLon Wright actually in a Serge Ibaka trade would make some sense.
Well, the Magic do need another point guard who can't shoot. That's for sure.
Got to collect them all.
We'll move on to San Antonio and New Orleans, but first, this from Betterment. You can learn more about them at betterment.com/catspace. They're the largest independent automated investing service out there. They make it easier, more straightforward, and less expensive to invest compared to traditional financial services. They have a lot of cool products as well. One is called Smart Deposit, where it's especially good if you're a freelancer, someone with an irregular income. If you get, say, above $5,000 in your checking account, If that's all you need, it will automatically invest any money that comes in above a certain amount in your checking account. So you can have the ability to save even when you have an irregular income, which is a nice feature, give you a little bit of a consumption smoothing. More than 150,000 customers choose Betterment's advanced advice algorithms and beautiful user interface to manage over $4 billion of their dollars. So good time to get started with them and saving for your retirement or saving for anything else, because Dunktown listeners can get up to 6 months of no fees. You can learn how at betterment.com/capspace. That's the URL. We talk about Capspace all the time in the program, so that slash Capspace URL is easy to remember. Betterment.com/capspace. Betterment, investing made better. All right, what do our friends the New Orleans Pelicans have in the quiver asset-wise?
They have all their own picks. All their own picks. Free and clear, moving forward, plus Philadelphia's 2017 second from the Ish Smith trade.
Nobody else really, though, other than Buddy Hield, who, of course, they believe in, that they would be looking to move, I don't think, or that would anybody would particularly want. Maybe Tim Frazier might be someone who has been out of the rotation right now, but he is the only point guard that they have who's under contract for next year, making only $2 million for next year. And he's played well this year. I think he could be a better backup point guard than some of the guys who have that job right now. But he's someone maybe they could move to try to get another pick or something once they realize that they're out of it. Which should be it. Check Diallo maybe has like some modicum of value, but I don't think he would get anything more than a second round pick. He was an early second round pick last year. They've got plenty of salary they'd love to get off of. Alexis Ajinsa and Omer Asik combined for $15 million a year or so, $16 million a year or so. The 2 years after this one, Asik has a $3 million guarantee in the last year of his contract as well, which is a player option or an ETO. And they would love to get off of those, but they're probably not going to be able to. And then this offseason, they're in an interesting situation with Tyreke Evans, Drew Holiday. If they want to re-sign those guys, they're not going to have cap space. If they don't, they could get into to around maybe 20 or 25 million, but they won't have anybody who can do anything off the dribble at all, if that's the case.
They need to have a really good sense of what Drew Holiday wants to do in free agency, because letting him go for nothing would be devastating for the next couple of years. They can't replace him. And while their pick is probably going to be pretty solid this year, you don't draft a point guard who, even if they got Fultz, who's going to be good in a couple of years. It takes a while. That's a position where there's a delay. And there are a few guys on the market that they could go after, but they probably have to overpay. They'll be a little bit too old. So if Drew if you can't figure out a number, if Drew wants to test out the market, it will be his first time as a free agent because he signed that extension before he left Philadelphia. You know, that's part of the reason that the Pelicans acquired him in the first place. I would seriously consider trading him because of risk mitigation. And he's a good player. He fits in well with what they're doing, but they need to be relevant during Anthony Davis's tenure with the team.
Yeah, AD has 3 more years after this one before he can be a free agent. The thing about that, though, is if you really want to get to not only having the possibility to win, but actually winning, if you draft someone in 2017, even that guy is unlikely to contribute by that point. You could see them doing more mortgaging in the future. I don't see them moving Holiday because
I don't either.
I think especially because I think the current regime is still going to be there, and they'll certainly be there through the trade deadline. And giving up on Holiday at that point, you're kind of giving up hope there a little bit, because I think whoever they are going to sign wouldn't be as good as Holiday. They might get like a first round pick back, probably. He's a starting point guard. Maybe they could even get 2. If you think of him as similar to where Goran Dragic was at the time, he's a little younger than Dragic was, but probably not as good as Dragic was at the time either. And I thought Miami, if anything, first round picks are a little bit more valuable now than they were back then. But maybe they're could be some more protection on him or something. That might be it. The one thing I thought about maybe is Chicago trading for him. If Chicago wants to really get back into the mix this year, Holiday would be perfect for them. I think actually if they got Holiday, they could take a major step forward. Just having a point guard who can shoot, do a little bit off the dribble. He would finally fit with Wade and Butler. Okay, he's a good defensive player, big enough to switch some. I think he could really improve Chicago's fortunes to where they could play at almost a 50-win level the rest of the year if they got him. him, but they could also just sign him as a free agent if they really wanted to pay for him, but they couldn't offer him that fifth year. And that's why you think New Orleans probably isn't going to move him, because there's nobody they're going to get who gives them the feeling of being as good as re-signing Holiday would next year. Holiday's going to be 27, and they can still offer him the 5 years, godfather offer him, and hope that he's going to stick around. But it's going to cost a lot of money and a lot of years to do that, but I don't think they care about that at this point. They're just going to pay what it takes.
I agree with you. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. And we'll have to see. I always talk about the third contract being important, because you learn what a player wants. And if he wants that financial security, he can absolutely get it. And many feel that he signed a below market extension in the first place, so he could be interested in that sort of security, in both in location and in money. But if not, you know, we could go to New York. There will be teams that will be interested in him, especially if players like George Hill and Jeff Teague go off the market because they stay with their current teams.
They're still deluding themselves into thinking that they're in this playoff chase. That's something that's going to need to end before the deadline, if any moves are going to be made. But they are projected right now to have the third worst record in the West, 30 wins, and the Blazers are projected for 39 to get in the playoffs. Like, they're not going to make the playoffs. They have a 1% chance right now. So even if they play, as we've talked about, at a 500 level, which is about where they played since Holiday came back, that's not going to get it done. And that's before accounting for the inevitable injuries that are going to hit them at some point soon. Another guy they could look to move is Tyreke Evans, who is still kind of on a minutes limit, not playing as many back-to-backs coming back, but has looked okay actually coming back from that surgery. He's a guy who I think could help a team that needs a creator on the second unit, a Charlotte, a Washington. Are you giving up a first rounder for Tyreke? Probably not. But I think that there are definitely teams that would be interested in him as a backup role who could just create a little something on the second unit.
I just with Tyreke, I think you move him just because it's a lot less likely that he gets re-signed than Jrue Holiday. He could be looking for anything.
And he's not helping them that much. Is he really giving them that much more than Tim Frazier this year?
Probably. And you're not going to sign and trade him, because A, that doesn't happen with veteran guys, you know, with bird rights, even if there's less cap space around the league. And second, because that would require matching salary in all likelihood. The reason you'd be signing and trading him is because the team wouldn't have cap space, and they probably wouldn't want that.
Yeah, and maybe he would be useful to a team that wanted to re-sign him with bird rights, although I wouldn't anticipate that he would get any more than the mid-level exception anyway. But then you're not using the exception on him, you're re-signing him, and you still have the exception free, so that would be nice. Ironically, I think he would never want to go back there, but he would be a good fit in Sacramento. They could use some playmaking.
I was thinking about him in Memphis. They don't really have the right salaries to make it work, but
yeah, have him just be their backup point guard. That right. Actually might be. Well, I mean, what's Tyreke making? $11 million. They could cobble it together, I'm sure. Let me see.
Brandon Wright, but he has money next year, and that's the last thing they need.
You're talking about the Pels?
Yeah, another center.
Well, at least he can play. That helps. I mean, Demo and Terrence Jones are going to be free agents. They'll actually need a backup center who can play.
God, that's so disgusting when they have $16 million in other centers and you say they need a backup center who can play. God.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Troy Daniels. They got Vince Carter. They've got enough salary that they could cobble together. But they are a little bit poor in terms of the assets there. But yeah, I think Memphis could use him. That's an interesting one as well. And also, they getting rid of Evans would help their draft pick as well. Like, that draft pick's starting to actually look okay. If they're projected for 30 wins, if they could get down into the 20s and get like a top five pick, like, now you're actually cooking in this draft with this New Orleans team.
Especially considering they have uses all over the floor, because there aren't really that many centers in this draft. So they could go with a lot of different players, would help them a lot.
Do you think anyone would want like Etuan Moore or Solomon Hill? I don't know that they even would want to give up those guys, frankly. I think they've been.
You wait until the summer. In the summer, if they look better and you have a different vision with free agents and everything else, maybe move them then. I think we're actually going to see a lot more of those trades this year, because the situation is so different than last year, where everyone just had space and spent, you know, ridiculously, that teams will become a little bit more judicious and say, well, we could sign this player to this number, or we could just trade for that player who it's already negotiated and that's their number. I expect that we'll see a little bit more of that this year.
You ready for San Antonio?
Yeah, a team that could be interesting, but probably won't be.
Well, considering I don't think they have made a deadline deal that mattered at all since 2005, when they got Nazi Muhammad, which was actually a huge deal for them winning the championship that year, I don't see it happening. They do have some guys who might be free agents, but again, like, they signed Pau Gasol this year. They don't have any bad salary. that is, unless you're counting guys who are legacy players for them, they also are not going to want to take on probably any more long-term money. Pau Gasol, it was reported, and I think he said as well, he plans to opt in to his $16 million. If that happens, unless they move some salary, they will not really be free agent players. That could maybe inspire them to take on a little bit more salary. I really think that they need... what do you think they need? That's a good question.
I would love to see another wing so that they can really go with somebody who can shoot with, they can really go try Kawhi at the four against
teams. Pop's not going to do that, though. I agree with you, but he seems just very adamantly opposed to that. Unless, you know, they're down by 30 in game six, then he might try it.
I don't know. It seems like you have a clear
Greg
vision.
Popovich is my pick for coach of the year, by the way, in case I feel like he's an excellent coach.
I think you have a clear vision
that
of what this is.
That is a blind spot for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very difficult. You know, if this were another team that wasn't really like in contention, Patty Mills is a guy who has a $6.8 million cap hold for next year, stayed on a discount last time in part because he had this shoulder injury. He's a guy who I think could start for another team, be a lower end starter because he can play off the ball so well. He's going to be 28. He hasn't really made any money in his career. I don't know how willing they're going to be to pay through the nose to re-sign him. If they weren't right there and they didn't need him, maybe they would talk about moving on from him. Jonathan Simmons will be a restricted free agent. He'll be Arenas limited. I don't know how strongly they feel about him, but maybe he will be someone that a normal team would move, but that's just not the way they operate. I don't think and they're not sort of cold and calculating in the way that, like, all right, this guy is overvalued, we're gonna dump him. That they just don't make moves like that, certainly not in season.
Thiago Splitter they traded, but they traded Thiago Splitter after the season to specifically clear space for LaMarcus, so that's a different situation.
What do they have just in terms of assets? Maybe we can go through that. The only thing, they've got all their own firsts. I don't think they're really out at any seconds at all. They've got Nikola Milutinov, number 26 in 2015. Not a guy we've really heard much about as having a ton of value. Athletic center, still parked over in Europe, but you know, I'm not sure that he's even anyone that I think they kind of just, because they had the transactions that they needed to fit in signing LaMarcus Aldridge at that point, they just kind of went with a signability pick who may never really work out for them. Not really a ton more in the quiver, and not just, you just don't see them trying to do anything. And again,
someone might like Kyle Anderson, but I don't think that someone is either of us.
Yeah. And with the Warriors being as good as they are, I don't think there's a transaction they could make to compete with them that much better anyway. I think they just roll with this group and we'll see how it turns out. Probably they get to the conference finals or they lose in the second round, and then we see what happens in the offseason.
Get a first round pick for David Lee.
All right, we done here?
Yeah, I think we are.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget about our sponsors today, the Pineapple Beach Club, SeatGeek, use that Capspace code to get a $20 rebate, and betterment.com/capspace will get you up to 6 months of no fees with automated investing. Our next podcast will be the mock trade deadline. Danny, are you excited for that?
Even at 2:17 in the morning, I am excited for that.
Me too. I'm looking forward to like doing all my prep work tomorrow. It'll be fun. Follow me on Twitter at @NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you at the end of the weekend.